Welcome to Certain Change, the Leadership Collection. I'm your host, Amelia Sabberwall. As a leadership and impact coach, I work with leaders around the globe to navigate their paths, find their voices, make bold choices, and implement change. I started this podcast because we all know the only certainty in life is change. But I see that this constantly takes us by surprise. The Leadership Collection is particularly focused on the human aspect of the business world. The purpose is to get the insider perspective of what's going on in the boardrooms across the globe. I want to gather stories from different sectors and understand who the leaders are behind the decisions being made. On today's Certain Change, I have a dynamic duo who have known and worked together for over 10 years. Simon Whitburn is Vice President and General Manager of the EMEA region for OneLogin. Their focus is cybersecurity, and Simon's skill set is in establishing markets and generating revenue for VC-funded, privately held vendors. He works with both governmental and commercial clients. His teams are spread across EMEA, and the company is global, so they're headquartered out of San Francisco. Oh, and he decided to start with them in March 2020. So, hashtag challenge. Mark Fopel is a personal trainer and coach. The first part of his fitness career was running gyms for the BBC and various city banks. He now provides a bespoke one-to-one fitness service to his clients, who are mainly over 50 years old. Not that I wanted to give Simon's age away. Sorry, Simon. As his own business, Mark has had to navigate a radical change of approach to his services. By the very nature of his training and coaching combo, he's also privy to a myriad leadership tales from his clients who have had challenges around this time. We will explore both his own experiences and the trends that he's witnessing in the wider world of leadership. So welcome to Certain Change, chaps.
Hi, how are we doing?
Let's dig straight in. And Simon, I think I'd like to start with you actually and just ask how it's been to start a very senior executive role and go straight into a lockdown and take the physical presence of getting to know your team out of the equation.
So I think I'd probably rewind a little bit to actually getting the job in the first place, because having gone through multiple interviews, and this was just when COVID started to appear, nobody knew really what the outcome was going to be. And I took a flight over to San Francisco to do sort of the final interviews, managed to get the flight back 2 days before everything went into lockdown. And then once I got back, of course, COVID really started to hit. And of course, it's a job that I really wanted, but then you're sort of in limbo. They said they were going to offer me, you know, because everyone's sort of readjusting and stopping and starting things. Was I actually going to get the offer? So sort of waiting with bated breath, got the offer, and then eventually started on the 30th of March. So we were properly into lockdown. Obviously, nobody was going to the office. I hadn't met the team previously. My boss at the time moved on, so he left. I was sort of promoted into a different role, all within the space of my first week. So that was probably the first challenge that I had. Then it was a case of getting to know the team and using tools that I'd used sporadically previously to really start to engage with them and start to trade a bit of a culture gap that was already there.
What were you noticing in your team? Because that's a lot of change for them to have gone mm-hmm. through. So firstly, lockdown, how do we cope with that and navigate that? Then boss leaves, new boss comes and is changing to a different role. That's a lot of change for people to get their heads around. How were they when you turned up?
I think they, because also they'd had three different leaders in the last 6 months. Mm. So there was some skepticism, I think, about somebody new coming in, as there always is with a new leadership coming into a role. But at the same time, they were crying out for some guidance, some process in what they were doing, and somebody really to help them navigate some of the challenges that they were seeing. Because the business in EMEA certainly had its challenges. And I think that manifested itself in some of the frustrations that they had. So obviously I had a call with all of them to start with, just to really understand, you know, what's working, what's not working, how are they feeling about things, you know, what are the frustrations that they've got, just to build up a picture. And of course, there were some constant themes through all the discussions, which sort of set me on my way to start to mitigate some of those and reduce some of the friction.
So it was through a series of, you're getting to know your team through calls.
Yeah, so we were already using Zoom, but not effectively. You know, people didn't always have their cameras on. There weren't pictures of them. So the first thing I did, and this is what I've been used to in the last few years, using these types of technologies, is making sure that those cameras are on. Partly make sure people aren't still in their pajamas, which I actually don't care about now, unless they're on a customer call. But just starting to get that eye-to-eye contact. And of course, at that point, you know, people weren't zoomed out, shall we say. And I think there's been some studies around how people react to actually seeing themselves on a constant basis. And that actually has some negative connotations around it. But certainly, that was the only medium that I had to get to know them. And it was a bit of a challenge to start with, but everyone now realises that that's how we communicate.
What were the challenges, actually?
So I think some of it was getting to know the individuals and probably more the personal aspects to them. Because until you really understand, normally you'd go through, you know, what motivates you, you know, what type of person are you? You know, when everyone starts, they do, or before they start, they do sort of a predictive analytical test to work out, you know, are they, what type of individual are they? Are they pragmatists, etc.? I probably fall into that bracket. I had some intel around the types of person that they were, but it was more about getting to know their personal situation in order to put a plan together for them that would help them manage the time, right? Because you've got lots of different characters. A lot of them, you know, have kids, you know, single parents, you know, they're looking after an elderly parent, you know, they have, you know, people at risk within their house, sort of building up that sort of picture. You know, do they have a good working space now? Or do they have somewhere quiet that they can go? All these sorts of things before we even got into talking about the business. And I think that was critical to start to build up that rapport with each of the members of the team.
Sounds like this is a different set of rules to when you've changed previously into a role. What were the big differences?
Obviously, not having met, still to this day, met my, 4 months later, still not met my team face-to-face, any of them. And some of them live just round the corner, which is bizarre. So that certainly was part of it. I think some of the biggest challenges were managing their expectations. Obviously, when we're going through this difficult time, there are people being furloughed, there are people, you know, being laid off. So there's a big concern around that. You know, do I still have a job? I think that was one of the big things. Yeah. But also making sure that, you know, as a collective, that the organisation sort of understood some of the challenges with the employees, because actually it's been positive from an output as far as work is concerned, because a lot of them weren't really doing anything. They were in lockdown. So they were working from 8 in the morning till probably 8 at night. Which is great, but the flip side is, you know, they start to get burnt out, being self-motivated and, you know, being continuing that passion around what you do can be really challenging. So I think that was one of the main things, telling somebody to take their foot off the pedal a little bit, which I'm not used to.
I was going to say, you look very uncomfortable with that.
And having more empathy around that, and then starting to put in some processes and ways that they can take regular breaks, the ways they can interact with their peers and with other parts of the business and in a more relaxing environment rather than, because it's high pressured, right? Certainly now it's even more high pressure than ever for businesses just to keep going. And it's making sure that we're sort of balancing that pressure and that will to succeed, which they all have, with that sort of mindfulness, keeping you know, their cool and making sure that they're taking time out for themselves in a busy day. And I think a lot of that comes down to making sure they're just working smart in what they do.
I'm just going to jump over to Mark and ask him, has Simon been taking his own medicine and taking his foot off the pedal?
As far as I'm aware, possibly a little bit too much now. He leads from the front. Leading on from a couple of things Simon said, my area, my job really is fitted into those part of what Simon's talking about where people have to have time away from work. What do they do with the rest of the time and how do they cope with this period of change during lockdown? One of the things that's come back from many of the people I've worked with is trying to get into a new routine, whereas you could go to an office and everything's there for you. You've got your team, you've got meetings. I suppose you've got some of that at home, but a lot of people I work with are having to find a new structure. And often training was another way of having a bit of structure into their day. It broke up their day. It got their mind out of what the work they were doing, and to try and get them back into themselves a little bit to reconnect with very simple things, everything from not just the exercise, but just to calm them down a little bit, because there's so much going on, particularly initially in the first month or so. There's a lot of anxiety. And even though I'm not working, I don't have people working for me, I think there was a lot of, I had to reassure people very much that they could continue with their health and fitness, that there was going to be a way through this, that they weren't going to put on lots of weight. They could do things at home effectively. And one, that I could hopefully support them in that, but also, I suppose, from my perspective, also, I was hoping that I'd have a business through it, because these people were used to having a very bespoke one-on-one service, very hands-on, building up a relationship with these people over a number of years. And I wasn't sure how that was going to really function over the internet. So there was, same with Simon, a lot of reassurance, but also I think I had an opportunity to really help them get through what was going on with the time we had together over the internet.
And how was it for you at that time, in that those first few weeks? What was it like being your own person? And
there was a lot of unknown factors. As I said before, I didn't really know what was going to happen. I'm used to seeing clients one-to-one, in face-to-face. And I touched on online training before, but it seemed a little bit too different. And I'm not sure the people I work with want to do that. They're over 50. They might not be so tech savvy. And can it be as effective? Are people going to pay a premium for this service or that service? I mean, those fears were allayed quite early on, but I had to really review my business and look at what was working and who was still going to be able to train. Have they got the right environment to train? The logistics of it, what kit have they got? Yes, it's all very well using your body weight. If somebody's got two very bad knees, a bad back and high blood pressure and stuff, you have to be very careful with how they move. So a lot of reassurance, a lot of sourcing of kit before it ran out. After the initial few weeks, there was a period where, okay, well, this could work. It's really about trying to provide as good a service I can in a different environment, really. And that's been the learning curve as much as anything else, is suddenly, okay, I thought I was a good coach, a good trainer. Doing it online is very, very different. It certainly made me think outside the box.
That's what I was just thinking, is there's a creativity to forced change, in a way.
There's an absence of, I think, resistance and anxiety that comes with it, because there's no option. It's not that, well, I can't do this. What if this goes wrong? You just do it. Which I think you're probably familiar with, where a lot of business leaders say, just do it. Just take that leap and adapt once you're into it, and you pivot to what comes up.
The point about adapting has really come out as a headline there, and trust. And so that's what Simon didn't have with his crew. Like, usually if you're in a physical environment, you've got an eye on people, you're mentoring, you're seeing where the cracks are, you're just picking up on the kind of non-verbal, like stuff that would easily slip through the cracks if you're only checking in even once a day on a stand-up. How have you had to adapt your leadership style to mine for those unseen bits?
To your point earlier, trust is a big thing, right? Building up that respect within the team, that they feel comfortable talking about things, because normally it's around the water cooler or whatever. A lot of these things come out, right? A lot of these themes, that frustrations, or they're upset about somebody in the business, or they're not getting the level of service they need from certain units within the business. And I think some of it is around the questioning when you are having those one-on-ones with them, trying to dive into some of those behavioural challenges that they're seeing rather than sort of specific things that they're, and it's trying to help them understand that people are generally going through, you know, their own, I don't like the word journey, their own adventure through this whole process, and trying to make them understand that they can freely speak, be very open. And I'm try to make it a very transparent, visible organization that we're working in now. So all those barriers have been knocked down. They're still here now and again through the back channel that somebody's upset with somebody else, but that's just nature of the business.
Have you got like a major success story that you've seen kind of go and do a 180?
There, you know, certainly with certain individuals, they have had to change the way they interact with others. And I'm a big advocate of, you know, making sure people don't work in silos and really having that layered message and visibility across all the teams where they have their own ways of, that they're measured. They interact with customers differently, but it's about making sure that everybody understands what everybody else's role is, because they don't always, they think they do this and they actually do some of that. And how does that impact me? And how can I impact them? And how does that all roll up to the business? So we'll be doing a lot of individual sessions, as in the individual, we'll be telling a story to the rest of the team about their background, you know, their sort of lifeline, if anyone's ever sort of drawn the lifeline and the pivotal points, sort of got them to where they are today. And then doing a little bit of a TED talk around something that they're passionate about. And it could be work-related, it could be non-work-related. So that I think that's really helped.
What has the impact been of that, of these passion projects and sharing that kind of information?
Well, I think you can normally tell by the attendance. They're all very well attended and we broach lots of subjects. I mean, Black Lives Matter has obviously come into that. General inclusion of, you know, minorities and other groups has been absolutely key. So there's been really interesting, engaging topics. Even now, I think we're 6-7 weeks in from doing it, we're still seeing a big take up and a lot of engagement as well, a lot of questions through those sessions as well, which is really encouraging.
And what have you seen, like, not just as a result of those, like a cohesion, I guess, with the team, have you seen that playing out in their work, in their deliverables, in their team play?
Yeah, so I think there's partly that, so feeling more inclusion is partly around the processes that we put in place. I'm a big believer in, you know, ask for forgiveness, not for permission. Be agile. I'm not gonna get upset with anybody through, you know, trying to be creative, trying to be entrepreneurial in their approach, giving them that flexibility. I don't like putting people in boxes, and it's making sure that they feel that they have a platform to grow and be creative.
Bad news. I'm sure there has been some to communicate in this period. How have you had to adapt to be an on-screen version of bad news?
Fortunately, so there's different kinds of bad news, right? So the bad news coming down from the top that needs to be filtered and then disseminated to the teams. And then there's bad news from the teams going up to the leadership within an organization as well. That's how you articulate that. And I think it's all about, you know, setting expectations up front. We went through a small right sizing at the start of COVID, which I know a lot of organizations did. You look in the media, you know, pretty much every day somebody's, you know, having to lay off people or whatever. So I think it's setting the expectations up front clearly, and it's all about communication, but not big hits. So there should never be any surprises, really. And it's about continuously communicating, you know, the state of the business, how you're doing in your role as in supporting that business, and sort of continuing that process, which again is something that, you know, we did before, but there's much more emphasis on it. So that, I think, takes away some of the shock in any potentially bad news that we might have to deliver.
So there's a teeing up and then a drip feeding of...
Yeah, but it's just to say, it's about expect. I can't guarantee that even I'll be in a job in 12 months' time. You know, there's no real guarantee. Certainly in sales, it's you're as good as your last quarter or your last month. So a lot of that has to be down to you. All I can do is make sure you're sort of the best version of you within the organization, and that we're completely transparent if there are challenges coming down the line, that people are aware of them.
I'm just going to jump over to Mark. Bad news? Anything to say on that?
The most common bad news is I can't fit into my jeans anymore. It's been people wearing lounge clothing, and then all of a sudden they try to put something sensible on.
It doesn't fit.
I bet Simon's not wearing his jeans. No,
I am actually. Well, really, really tight ones. I used to just be tight.
Mark, what are you hearing from other clients? Like, what have their big challenges been at this time?
I think there's a division within my clients in terms of those who are actively working quite hard. So they might have various stresses, similar to Simon's, really, running a large business, having furloughed staff, downsized offices. And what I do hear, particularly in the short term, really an adjustment to how their businesses are working for some of them, that the changes that have happened, the ramifications of that are going to last longer than just probably COVID by the sounds of things, whether it's just the downsizing of office and reduction in staff. But I think working from home, this idea that we don't have to travel so much, don't have to come into the office as much, that's been stressful for some of them as they manage that and implement those strategies. But there's also, I think, being at home has brought up quite a lot of positive aspects for people, being around the family, cutting out that travel time, I suppose, and not traveling to clients or whatever. And that, I've seen that crossover in terms of some of them have been able to start looking at areas of their wellness that they weren't prepared to look at before. They've been stuck at home, so they've had to slow down to some extent. There's less distraction. And again, I think perhaps Simon said about August being a quiet month. I think coming out of August now, people are coming back from holiday. I think the first few months, there's a lot of activity, a lot of concern as to what was going to happen. And people now, my clients seem to have settled more into a routine. As Simon said, I think sometime before, about the new normal. I see with my clients much more of a longer term view that this is going to continue as it is. How can we make it work as best we can with this new environment? Mm-hmm. And how to put their lifestyles together in a way that they're going to get the most out of it. I think because they're slightly older, 50 age plus, there's been a lot more focus, they've become more focused on their health. They were focused on that anyway, but if anything, it's become more important to them.
What have you seen the slowing down give them?
One of the things that always came up with people in my job with clients is, I don't have time, or I forgot to do this, and how can I fit all of this in? And for most people, for a lot of people, that time pressure's disappeared now for some of the reasons I talked to before about traveling and just being at home. So I've heard everything from people going for much longer walks, getting on their bikes, spending more time with their partners, things that weren't able to do, one, because they weren't there, but also because you're forced to be with these people
laughing.
Now, for better or for worse. You hear on the news that it's not always great, but the feedback I get from people is that that's been a generally a positive aspect to it. And, you know, we hear lots about, well, we need to slow down, we need to take stock. And I think on the most practical level, what I've really come across with clients, something that I've tried to get clients to do in the past and they've been less keen to do so, is work on things like meditation. And one of the issues that has come up with people have struggled with sleep. And for whatever reason, obviously for different reasons than going to work every day, but sleep's been an issue. And I think people have got a lot going on in their heads if they haven't had so much going on in their immediate environment.
Oh, interesting. Sorry, just so I understand that a bit more. So I guess the lack of movement, getting up, going to work, that kind of routine has actually kind of manifested in their minds a little more. The mind's racing, the sleep's not happening.
I think two things. The change in movement patterns, like being at home all day, being limited initially to, like, you can go out for half an hour or an hour and stuff. I saw an increase in people's pain. People just sitting on the sofas, lying down, just not being as varied in their movement for as long So a lot of people were experiencing physical pain, particularly back or hip pain, typically. And I think a lot of people were spending a lot of time on Zoom calls, so we're all hunched over and they're like, oh, my neck aches and stuff. So there was dealing with that, whether people are just not using up as much energy, so they go to bed and like, all right, what next? Getting over boredom. And possibly, you know, I've done it a lot, which is just I'm in bed and I'm thinking, right, okay, yeah, I know what I'm doing tomorrow, but what about next month? You know, what, you know, you've got the news to stress you out, but then you're looking at your own business and what you've got to do with your family and yourself. And so the idea of having that busy head in, but the concerns and worries are new again, because there are no certainties, but we've just been thrown this curveball. We don't know what's going on from 1 month to the next. And so I think that's played a part in it as well.
What have you both been advising people who have come to you with that angst about the future? The unanswerable question of what happens next month, because no one can know. How have you both managed that?
Well, I think for whatever reason, they think we have the answers.
Yeah.
And the honest truth is, we don't. You know, we're trying to manage it. And I think it's about setting expectations, sort of personal expectations, business expectations, the role that they're in, the expectations there. And it's really about, you know, keeping your head down, doing the right things. In my world, having a 5-year strategy or 3-year strategy is kind of thrown out the window a little bit now. And actually, it's looking at, you know, how agile can we be as an organization? How do we include the team in that to make sure they can see what we're doing and give them some comfort and some confidence in the business? And therefore, you know, hopefully their job, their role is more secure, but also giving them some visibility into how we're changing as an organization. You know, what our message is to our customers? How are we keeping our existing customers, which is probably the hardest piece. Things, there's some articles out recently around how certainly larger organizations are shifting to maintain their current business, because it's a lot cheaper to keep hold of an existing customer. But also how we're leaning into it as well. How are we really trying to change some of the, because the use cases for any technology have changed. Right, people are accessing data from different places. There's lots of cloud migration going on, and how are we demonstrating that we're part of that journey for our customers? How are we articulating it? What tools are we using? Because a lot of, and that's been a big challenge as well. You know, the team are used to going out to physical events, right? And that's where they've been going and talking to people, and I know we're going off topic a little bit, but how they would get their leads, how they would build their network, all that sort of stuff. And that whole piece is sort of missing. So we need to show the team that we're being more agile in our approach to giving them access to people. And I think it's all those different things sort of collectively that answers the question, but in lots of different ways. I don't think there is one answer that, yes, you're going to be back in the office in 3 months' time. I think Google announced a few weeks ago that they're not expecting people to come back till next summer.
No.
Right. So of course people are asking, well, are we really not going back to the office till next summer? That could be quite demoralizing. We had some of the team going into the office last week to work for a few hours. And the overriding emotion when they came out of it was sadness, because they knew, not through us telling them, because you know, all we can say is that we review things on a regular basis, but they knew that they weren't going to be back in that environment for several months, if not, you know, well into next year.
Just what comes across for me from that, Simon, something that Amelia touched on earlier, was this idea of adaptability. It's all very well having your plan and your goals in business, in health. They've always changed. And I think the present environment has magnified the fact that things can change massively, very, very quickly, with things out of your control. And I think there's a certain level of confidence I pick up on with people that they've been able to adapt, that despite everything, as much as possible, even when it's been hard, people have got through it to some extent. That's not to say that there's thousands of people who, obviously, it's been a massive struggle for when you hear on the news. But if you're talking about my experience with working with people and some of their businesses, is that generally they've adapted and it's perhaps heightened people's awareness as to how quickly things can change, and not to sit on the laurels, or not just to be as comfortable as they were before, and to embrace change a little bit more. I have to speak from my own perspective. I think I've been forced to change, and that's probably been a good thing, really.
I think there's a lot of good news stories out of this as well. What I'm hearing from you both is that there, if you choose to put your appreciator hat on to this, it has proven to the world that everyone can adapt. Mm. And I think a lot of people, I know this through my own coaching practice, actually genuinely don't think they can. And that's when I'm working with them to change something. Yeah. So we hate change. We just hate it. And I think there is a lot of good to come out of this in that it's, exactly as you say, Mark, there's a confidence now that, well, we can do hard things. Mm-hmm. Really, really almost impossible. I mean, we built a freaking hospital in days. There really isn't anything we can't do. Just circling back to what Simon said there, this is a theme I'm starting to see, and actually one that I was introducing as a leader myself, was around transparency of business strategy. We're giving this a go. Mm-hmm. Come with us.
Yeah.
Like, this is the transparency. It may not work because, you know, COVID or, you know, markets. And there's just, I'm seeing that there's an opening up now of people who would usually close some boardroom doors, make some decisions and communicate it in a very formal way, maybe once or twice a year. And people were told what was going to happen. And what I'm hearing now from you, Simon, as well, there's an opening up of what we're giving a go to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the overriding theme, I think, for us is in a number of aspects. It's let's try it, but let's fail fast. We're going to fail. Let's fail fast. Let's not deliberate over it. If it's not working, let's move or change something in the direction we were going, or find another direction. And I think for whatever we're doing, whether it's a process internal thing, whether it's an external with customers, you know, we're not experts at it yet, and people don't like letting go, whether it's a deal, whether it's, you know, a new functionality in a product or a go-to-market strategy. You know, we want to see it out and sort of test it out, and this, you know, we don't have time to do that anymore. You know, we have to be more agile. You know, we have an opportunity, certainly with a company my size, that should be something we should be, you know, massively taking advantage of, because we're not the oil tanker with the speedboat, right? We should be able to do a 360 if we need to. And I think that's what we've realised, that yes, we can do that, and we should be doing that.
So more permission to everybody to be more entrepreneurial, more creative, more give it a go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is definitely started to filter through. It has its boundaries, obviously, especially when you're in tech and you're dealing with, you know, hungry salespeople. They don't always sell what you have. They, you know, sometimes it's about selling futures and dreams, and it, you know, we can't do that anymore, because we don't. If, as soon as you start doing that, you move away from your strategy as an organization. So there's a balancing act to it. But there's certain some areas where they can be very entrepreneurial in how they manage their business versus some of the restraints that they are probably more aware of now, where they can't go. So I think that's an interesting dynamic.
What things have been, I mean, other than weekly announcements from the government, surprise, we're doing this now. What have the surprises been for you? The good, the bad and the ugly?
One of the main surprises has been how quickly people have been responding to working in a different way and trying to keep things quite simple for them. And they haven't required extreme changes. They haven't required lots and lots of more information. They've been appreciated stuff to be kept quite simple, precise. And they go, off you go, this is what you need to do. And I think in my head somewhere, it was like, oh my God, we're going to need to do this. I have to have this in place. I need to have this app, I need to be coaching them with this method. And I think touching on failing early and trying different things, a readiness to, when I've said to people, like, well, this is something that might have to happen in the future, yeah, we'll try that. So it has opened people up to trying things in a new way, but it's quietened a lot of my thoughts in terms of things have to be complicated and right before I can try them with people.
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise, which probably shouldn't be a surprise, and then there's a nice surprise out of it, was the impact of COVID. Because we're in my industry, we actually enable home working. So we work on securing applications that people are using, that they can use them from anywhere, and if they're in the cloud or whatever, whether they're a customer, a partner, or sort of internal users. And where we sort of assume that the perfect storm, right? That everyone's now working from home, so great, this is gonna fly off the shelves. And it was, there was some more demand, but the flip side was that because of COVID, a lot of projects that were being put on hold or removed completely, which was a real challenge for us, but also a big percentage of opportunities that we had, there was a level of non-engagement from the prospect. So we would engage with somebody, everything's going well, yes, 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 and then they completely ghost you. And it wasn't because they wanted to, they were either being furloughed, they've been unfortunately made redundant, and of course you lose all that sort of rhythm, sort of momentum that you not typically get in a normal environment. So that was sort of a negative surprise for us, and obviously we've had to adapt our messaging towards that. On the flip side, I thought that with everybody working from home, that we would have a real issue with making sure that they were putting the effort in, that there was that sense of urgency around their role. And actually, it was probably the opposite. As I said earlier, you know, they are working really hard because it is just harder now, right? Getting hold of people, interacting, everything else. You've got to put that much more effort in. But again, making sure that they're not burning themselves out. Different surprise, and I'm sure there'll be a few more along the way.
Simon, question for you really here. How do you balance the expectation of a growth business such as yours with the motivation and a duty of care to your team?
So I think it's probably a double-edged sword. It is a real challenge. If we talk about the team and the duty of care to start with. So we want them to all get together, right? We want them to get together in a social environment. You know, unfortunately, we've shut down the offices, so they can't socialise there. And we're trying to find ways, and it's sort of a work in progress. So how do we do that safely? Because they're going into public spaces. We've been meeting in a public space. There's other people there that they could interact with. And we don't want to be responsible for them contracting something. And the only way really around that is for them to sign sort of a waiver to mitigate any risk to the business, which, of course, they're reluctant to do. So it's trying to come up with different ways. And we're still working it through, both legally, but also seeing what the team would be prepared to do. And maybe it's just sort of a picnic in the park rather than, you know, going to a pub or something like that. But just making sure but it's also looking at the travel. Is that safe? You know, it's really, really difficult to sort of manage that whole piece. And I would say one of the hardest things that I had to do is to try and sort of reset the expectations of the business. You know, we were a business that was expected to grow at a certain rate. Obviously, everyone has cash flow issues and things like that. And it's sort of bringing down that expectation when you're having to do more with less and working with people that are having to do things that they're probably not used to or have expertise in order to deliver the end result. So I think working with the senior management team, my peers, in how do we get through that to maintain a level of growth that everyone's comfortable with to make sure that we're a successful business. One of the things that has been key for us is data. So we have pools of data. It could be about our customers, could be about how we're prospecting, how we're going to market, you know, how much business is going through our channel partners. And I would say the big difference in sort of bridging some of that is how we're using the data now far more effectively than we did before, because we need to be more granular. We need to find the trends, good or bad, and be able to sort of move quickly to either take advantage of something or to change something that we know isn't working.
How do you go about, what do you have to dig into to reset the expectations?
So there's a few things. There's sort of utilization. So we've looked at utilization, we've looked at efficiency. And actually you get to a point where even if we were 100% efficient and utilization was at 110%, you know, we still probably wouldn't meet our goals, because you look at the industry averages and it just doesn't tally up. So that's good ammunition for me to go back to the business and say, well, you've got to look at the data and you've got to look at the trends within our industry. And you've got to look at, you know, how these organizations are dealing with that. And is it reasonable to set the goals at this level, or maybe we should set them more realistically at this level? And here's the justification to do that.
I'm getting this image of, like, you have to be kind of the softer side leadership to your team and make sure that they're supported and cushioned to some extent and ready for change. And then upstream, you've got the hard facts, data, showing the spreadsheets. And right at the end, is this reasonable?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we've necessarily cracked the last one.
I wondered what the result would be.
We're working on it.
Kind of just to round off, let's start with you, Simon. What is the advice that you'd be giving people who are in your shoes in an exec level, managing a virtual team really for the long term now?
Yeah, so I think the advice that I would give is, from a business perspective, you know, make sure your existing customers are happy. Make sure that they are still transacting. Be more of a partner to them, not just a sort of vendor-client relationship, because they're going through hardships and some businesses won't survive. But you want to be there, and we've done it with certain customers. You know, we've changed, you know, contractual terms, or we've tried to help them through this difficult time as much as possible, especially in sort of the retail sector, you know, airlines that we're working with globally and organizations like that. You know, it's been, or manufacturing of certain parts for airlines and things like that have been a major issue. So, you know, stay engaged with your existing customers. The other piece would be, you know, make sure that you're putting your arm around your staff on a regular basis. And it's not, and it's about the encouragement and making sure that they feel empowered and confident in their role and that they're able to deliver, and you're living that with them. Whereas before I probably wouldn't have been as close. I'm making the effort, whether it's on a customer call, whether it's, you know, they're engaging with a partner, whether it's whatever they want to do, to feel that we're, you know, not big brother, but we're all in it together. And I'm a sales tool for them to make sure that I get them what they need to be successful.
Has that been your biggest lesson through this? The empathy, the personal touch with the team?
I'm not quite sure what you're saying there, Amelia. because I would say my management style has changed. The adaptation, you know, I've had to change it, because the approach I probably had 2 years ago would never work in this environment, and it would probably be seen as quite negative. So I've definitely had to change and adapt how I engage. And I mentioned it earlier, right from the start, you know, you can't go in hard and then, oh no, I'm actually, you know, bad cop, good cop. You've got to be consistent when you're talking to people. And I think that's really, really been important. And the sort of early lesson that I learned when I first started this role in particular.
A softening of Simon Whitburn. Who knew? Thanks, COVID. I'm going to go to Mark on the advice giving. What advice do you have?
Well, I think in terms of people's health and wellness, I think being kind to yourself, really, and giving yourself a bit of a break, considering everything that people are going through. You know, you just, if you go on Instagram or Facebook, whatever, you can go on there and think, oh, people are doing all these things. They're doing Joe Wicks. They're doing that. There's so much. There's a lot of information out there and everybody's doing all of it. And it's either that or people are having a great time. Mm. For most people, it's somewhere in between. And I think taking a step back, giving yourself the time to think about what's important and how are you doing in yourself, and not just go to the gym, well, if it's open, or just do an exercise class for the sake of it. But, you know, things are changing. So whether it's just walking or just spending time with family, but think about what you want to get out of it. And I know it's a cliche, but just really have some idea of what your goals are, whether it's just to maintain your weight or to do half an hour walk every day and stuff, and accept that's maybe what you're capable of doing. If you want to do more, if you've got other goals, then so be it. But it's more important to have an idea of why you're doing it right now. Otherwise, it's very easy to lose focus and spend a bit more time on the couch, or even train too hard or do the wrong type of exercise, because you've got to look after your body. So yeah, I think be kind to yourself and almost don't expect too much of yourself during this time, regardless of what you see people doing in the park or on the internet.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me. I think that was really interesting. What a balance of business and wellness. Thank you.
Right, we enjoyed it. Thanks, Amelia. It was good fun.
So that was Simon and Mark. I learned a few things today. Starting with Mark, I was impressed that he was able to pivot so quickly his business online. And I think that was the key message for me about his words, was about adaptability, not only of his own business, but what he's seen in others. And that, really speaking, the world has done some impressive things to adapt, and where we never thought it possible. And now it's moving into a second phase, and it's moving into the long term now. And humans are far more agile and adaptable than they think they are. And I think that's actually the good news story here. Moving on to Simon, there's two things that came up for me here. Business-wise, I was impressed that he was able to be part of the journey of kind of taking the ship from an oil tanker to kind of a more nimble, agile, zhuzhy little yacht. He's introduced this fail-fast culture, and that's a daring thing to do. I know Google's been doing that for years, and it takes guts to do. It means you're asking your team to be vulnerable and put big ideas out there, test them out, and then kill their darlings effectively if it's not working. But it's certainly a robust way of working in this environment. I really loved the way he put a theme that has come out in all of these interview series: no big hits on the comms. It's a little and often. There should be no surprises, he says here. I mean, I wish that was always the case, but I love that people are learning this lesson, and it seems to be a common theme. What I loved about his own personal journey and what he shared with us is that he has become a more personable leader. He's had to learn to supersize the empathy, to understand his team on a more personal level, asking them to put their pens down at the end of the day, curating personal plans for each of his team members. It seemed like it was a seismic shift for him to have made. His leadership even 2 years ago was totally different. And I appreciate him sharing that with us. And I love that he said that his job effectively is to make his team the best version of themselves. I thought that was a very generous way of looking at leadership, and is actually bang on what leadership is all about. Otherwise, you're just managing people. And there's a big difference between managing and leading. And I met two leaders today. So join me next time for the leadership connection of Certain Change. You can find me at Amelia@kinestheticacoaching.com. I'm on Instagram at Certain Change Podcast. And you can always find me on LinkedIn, Amelia Sabawal. I look forward to hearing from you.